This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
We are going to talk about the NBA draft in a second. And at the bottom of the hour, our friend Kanata Edwards, Nada the Scribe, Locked On Hornets podcast, will join us to break it all down. Remember last week when Texas A&M and Missouri were trying to gather support to block Texas and Oklahoma from joining the SEC? I guess they had a change of heart. A&M and Missouri, they both approved the move. The two newbies in the SEC, both dead set against Texas and Oklahoma joining the frat, ultimately changed their mind at the end. Okay. Nobody's got a backbone at all in college sports. There isn't a backbone to be found. Unbelievable. Now, to avoid the buyout, which is both Texas and Oklahoma have signed their grant of rights to the Big 12 until the end of the 24-25 season. By the way, the ACC has a grant of rights, all of their schools, through like 36. We're going to talk about that eventually. In order to avoid basically giving up media money, because that's what the grant of rights says, they're going to have to stay in the Big 12 until the end of the 24-25 sports season. So basically through baseball season in 25. But ESPN's Sam Acho thinks maybe not.
It's not going to be 2025. I think this is going to happen 2022, obviously at the earliest, and honestly, most likely. I think 2023, people are kind of saying it could happen then, but I think that's a little late. If you just look at some of the projections, put it that way, in 2025, it's projected that the SEC could generate $1.3 billion. Wow. The NCAA in 2025 as a whole will generate right around $1.3 billion. Money talks. Why would the SEC need to even stay a part of the NCAA when they're making that much money?
Okay, well, we're all going to have to assume that lawyers are going to be involved, right? You know, lawyers are going to lawyer. So it is possible that Texas and Oklahoma might simply try to buy their way out of the Big 12 sooner. But if you're the Big 12 and you're staring extinction in the face, which is clearly what's going to happen, at the very least, you might stay together, but it's not going to be at the same economic level that you've been at. Why would you let Texas and Oklahoma off the hook? I mean, they can lawyer all they want. And all you got to do is say, grant of rights. We get your media money here until the 24-25 season is complete. Mm-hmm. So if you join in 22 and we're saying in 23... and for those two seasons, we're talking about, I don't know, $70 million in media money each. Well, the Big 12 is like, yeah, we'll take it. I'm sure they'll settle for something on the dollar. But to me, Texas and Oklahoma are going to have to buy their way out earlier. But frankly, they can both do it.
Oh, they can afford it.
They can both do it. So, yeah, but to me, this is about lawyers going to lawyer. All right, Andy Staples yesterday, he joined us. He covers college football from The Athletic. And I wanted to bring this up because I think it's an interesting discussion, and we'll just jump on this real quick, and then we'll move on. Staples yesterday talked about basically all the great football that will now be played not only in this SEC, but in future SECs. Now, they're 14. They'll be 16 with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. They will be playing great football. Clearly, he was not talking about Texas at that point. And then I posed the idea that we'll probably be headed for a split from the NCAA. So if you've been paying attention to things that I've been saying for really a few years, I think the future of college football is a separation, even within what we have now with FBS. I believe that it will essentially, I wouldn't even say cut in half. I think it will be more than half of the schools in FBS right now. Essentially, the power leagues separating entirely from the rest of Division I and dragging some others with them. And maybe that's to throw a bone to places like ECU and App. I don't know. But I think, I mean, Alabama is not playing Georgia every week. So that's what I think. Andy Staples said, I think you're shooting way too high.
That is what we theorized in a story today, that perhaps this is the first step toward a Super League under the SEC banner, which wouldn't be an immediate thing. That would be, you know, 20 years from now. But it is going to change. The governance of the sport is going to change. The NCAA is going to shrink back. And Mark Emmert said it himself the other day, that perhaps each sport needs to be governed individually.
Hmm.
And if you have that, then, and the SEC keeps scooping up the best teams every time it gets a chance, well, eventually that's the Premier League.
Is that sustainable financially?
Yeah. I mean, people like to watch good football teams play. So I'd say that's probably the most sustainable financial model.
Right. Well, no, they like to watch good football teams, but this is something that I have wondered. Why does Arkansas want that? Other than for the paycheck, which I totally understand.
For the paycheck.
Right. No, the paycheck is enormous. I get it. But competitively speaking, and I understand that we're probably not even talking about, like, why did Maryland want to go to the Big Ten? It wasn't because it was going to make them better. It just made them.
We'll talk about the English Premier League. Why does the team fight to be number 17 so they can stay in the Premier League?
Right.
They don't stand a chance of winning a title, but they don't want to get relegated. So if you can not be relegated, that's great.
All right, here's my question. I'm going to guess, I'm going to kind of muse here. There's not going to be relegation in this Super League, is there? So, Stoke, Wolverhampton, whatever.
Yeah.
What are their options? They have no options.
Mm-mm.
There's nowhere to go. You go down to, English League Champions, which is the one level down, and you make no money.
Yeah.
You make, like, I mean, they make a little bit of money, but they basically make no money. And I would point this out, that even at 17, finishing 17th, it's not like everybody in the EPL is getting the same share.
No.
They don't. It's tiered. The clubs that finish higher get more money, which, I don't know, maybe is the right way to do it. I'm not even trying to argue. Maybe it's the right way to do it. But I just, this would be a cataclysmically bad, is cataclysmically even a word? I don't know. It should be.
We'll take it.
It would be a terrible development for college sports. It would destroy sports not named football.
Yeah.
At many, many schools. You'd still have basketball, men's and women's basketball, but man, we all agree that football floats athletic departments. We all agree to that. I mean, even if you don't have great football, it's probably floating your athletic department.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not in this 40, screw it, man. You ain't having track.
Yeah.
You are just not going to have it. I don't think we're headed to where Andy thinks we're headed, because that would be a significant destruction to the to the entire notion of intercollegiate sports. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe everything becomes club sports after that. I don't know. I don't see that. And I see a lot of weird things happening in the future. I just don't see that. We'll talk about this more a little bit later on, because I think it is a fascinating discussion. All right, moving on real quick. Did you know, Dennis, the NBA draft was last night?
I heard reports of that, yes.
I might be wrong here, but I'm not sure that this wasn't the least anticipated draft of the last 25 years. I don't know. I will allow that I am incorrect, and personally, because here in the state of North Carolina, there was no interest.
Yeah.
I mean, Jalen Johnson was taken 20th by Atlanta.
Yeah.
By the way, should it say, rather than say Duke, shouldn't it say in parentheses, he quit first? Ha ha, I don't believe he quit. And I'm just kind of digging all the people. He's such a quitter. He did exactly what the kids at Pitt did. He made a decision based on what was best for him right now. They all left midstream, yeah. Right? Those guys just bailed midstream. Anyway.
Trey Murphy from here in the Triangle was picked 17th.
He was. That's right. My fault. Good for him. Cade Cunningham. Right, he went number one.
Yep.
Played in witness protection.
Yes.
At Oklahoma State. Jalen Green. He went number two. C. Cade Cunningham. Also played in witness protection. Played in the G League Ignite. Evan Mobley. Played while all of you were asleep at Southern Cal.
Yeah.
Scotty Barnes, number four.
Yes.
Good for Scotty Barnes. I've been saying this for a long time. Florida State's basketball program is one of the jewels of college basketball. But he didn't start for FSU, which is awesome. Jalen Suggs, who played at Gonzaga and looks very much like a player who will be okay, I guess, he went number five. Hornets went for
the Charlotte Hornets.
There you go, James Bouknight, number 11. They also sent a future first to the Knicks for Kai Jones, kid, a power forward out of Texas, at number 19. They also drafted Balsa Koprivica, big man, 7'3", from Florida State, late in the second round. And I thought, now work with me on this, Dennis. Mm-hmm. I thought, would they trade Balsa? See how many people get that. They got Mason Plumlee in the trade.
Yes.
I actually like that deal. We'll talk to Kanata Edwards, not of the Scribe, in just a couple minutes about that. Kemba Walker was traded. All right, quick check of the Olympics. Kemba Walker was traded, by the way, to Oklahoma City, where everybody gets traded. Oh, and Russell Westbrook was traded to the Lakers. We're going to talk about this with Kanata because I'm not entirely sure I get the whole Russell Westbrook thing, but that's fine. Suni Lee, we should have talked about this yesterday, but we didn't. Suni Lee filled the void of Simone Biles by winning the gymnastics all around. Good for her, man. She was awesome. And continues a run of U.S. dominance in the event. Ryan Murphy, I want you to hear this real quick before we bring in a guest. Ryan Murphy finished second, silver medal in the 200-meter backstroke, to a swimmer from the Russian Olympic Committee. And here's Ryan Murphy after the race.
I can't answer that question. Like, I don't know if it was 100% clean, and that's because of things that have happened over the past. Yeah, I think, to be clear, I've never made, like, my intention is not to make any allegations here. Like, congratulations to Eugenie, congratulations to Luke. I think they did an incredible job. They're both very talented swimmers. I think they both worked really hard. They've got great technique. At the end of the day, like, I do believe there's doping in swimming, and that is what it is.
I got news for you, Ryan. You've made an allegation. I mean, you can't say, I'm not saying, I'm just saying, and have that not being taken as an allegation. So I think that's unfair. But at the same time, I think a lot of us that have watched Russian Olympic Committee athletes with the Olympic flag as their symbol, and playing Tchaikovsky, but not the Russian national anthem, all of us who watch and give a damn about it are thinking the same thing. Like, could you have a more toothless set of penalties for systematic doping by Russia? Could you have it? No. No, you couldn't devise a system in which there was less penalty to sanctions. All your athletes are good. It even says Russian Olympic Committee.
Yes.
In the nickname and the whatever that is. And we're playing Tchaikovsky. It's just the dumbest. I mean, state-sponsored doping, state-sponsored cover-up, all of that, not punished at all because the athletes are all there. And I feel bad for the athletes because they're feeling the brunt of something that Russia did. Anyway, we'll move on from that. Maybe we'll talk about it later. But I'll tell you what I was captivated by today. U.S. women's soccer, they were taking on the Netherlands. And Megan Rapinoe in a penalty kick. Do we have the end? This is how it ended, with the United States putting away the Netherlands in penalties.
Megan Rapinoe to send the United States to the semi-final of Tokyo 2020. It doesn't get much more comprehensive than that. Megan Rapinoe into the top corner, and the USA win 4-2 on penalties.
All right, let's move on. We have Paul Riley, who is the head coach of the North Carolina Courage. They will take on the Orlando Pride, I guess it's tomorrow, at Wake Med Soccer Park, and he joins us. We're going to talk about your two players, who I thought were fantastic in the first half, in a second. But let me ask you, big picture, was the United States the better team today than the Netherlands?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I mean, I look at the Netherlands and the way they play suits the Americans, you know, suits the U.S. team because there's not high pressure. They're very methodical in the build-up, allows the U.S. to get players behind the ball, and they're not quick in transition. You know, I think Sweden, Australia provide a completely different picture, and I think that's where you got to look at to beat the U.S. I think methodically, I don't think the Netherlands have got it to beat the U.S., to be honest with you. And the U.S. had a few goals disallowed that were very close. I think they lack a bit of pace in the back, the Netherlands too. So I think in the end, the U.S. deserved to win the game. And they could have lost it, obviously, with a penalty that the Netherlands missed midway through the second half, or I should say saved by Alyssa Nair, who had a great game, in my opinion. But it can go either way when it goes to penalties. But the U.S. hold their nerve again, and they seem to always be able to hold their nerve. And you got to look at that and say that mentality is going to keep them in good stead for the semifinal and the final, I think.
See, this is why I talked to you, Paul Riley, because I'm watching the game. And to me, it looked like, especially after subbing off Sam Mewis and Lynn Williams, among others, it almost seemed at that point that while the U.S. had some chances with counterattacks and long balls, that it seemed like the Netherlands controlled the play in the second half, which was somewhat disappointing. The Netherlands are good. They obviously play a different style. But you think the U.S. was the better team?
Well, I just think they controlled the play, the Netherlands, but they didn't create anything.
Right.
I mean, I don't remember more than one chance the entire second half and into overtime that they created. It's great to play in the midfield and knock the ball around and get 20 passes and stuff, but they didn't look dangerous in the box to me. And the U.S., in all fairness, I mean, Alex had a goal disallowed, Press had a goal disallowed. They were close. U.S. are a little bit more counterattack and a little bit more transition-based, and I think that causes teams like Netherlands problems. So I think in the end, they deserve to win the game. They're two different completely styles for me, and the style of the U.S. team won in the end. And I think in regulation, they should have won the game. I think they did enough to create those chances to win the game, but obviously it could have gone either way. I mean, the Netherlands are good, but I don't think they're as good as Sweden, and I don't think they're as good as Australia. I think these teams that can high-press and press the U.S. and the U.S. can't find rhythm. And I don't think the U.S. have found much rhythm in the tournament so far, to be perfectly honest with you. It's been a bit hopscotch. I don't know if that's a change in the lineup or what it is, but there's not been a lot of rhythm. And that's the only thing that worries me. I mean, they play four games. They've only won one of them in the 90 minutes.
Right.
That's a little bit scary, you know. And I think the Canada one's a good game for them to get really in a groove. Canada's more methodical too. They're not super athletic, and I think that'd be a good game for the U.S. to get some rhythm, because they're going to need some rhythm to be able to play through the press of Sweden or Australia, I think, in the final.
Paul Riley, North Carolina Courage head coach, joining us here. Two of your players scored the goals. Sam Mewis, the first one on a header off a cross from Lynn Williams, the other Lynn Williams, who pounced on a ball in the box and drilled it through. You and I talked before they made the change to allow all of the reserves, essentially the alternate players, on the main roster. But you said you thought that Lynn would get her opportunities to play. She got the start today, which threw Twitter into a frenzy. But I'm not sure that both she and Sam weren't two of the best players on the field the first 60 minutes.
Yeah, the Twitter trolls were at it today, there's no question. But Lynn shut them up, and that's always nice to see. But no, I had a feeling, you know, when you got a Lynn Williams on the bench, at some point Lynn is going to be effective for you. And in a game like this where the back four slow and you want to put a press on them where they can't play out, I think Lynn's the perfect weapon. So I think it was a great decision by Vlatko to play her. And obviously, you know, we always say that Sam and Lynn have a great connection together. And I think you saw the connection on the first goal, and then Lynn scored a great second goal. And I think it's good for her. She you know, we thought she would have a moment. I don't know if she thought it would be this big a moment, but I mean, I would have kept them on the field personally for another 20 minutes probably, because I think they probably could have won the game for them because they were in such a good moment. But hey, I'm not the coach, and there's obviously other decisions. It looks like it was prior decisions of the game that were made. But Lynn's the Twitter trolls can go to bed now, because Lynn's got the job done, and hopefully she'll make the 18 for the next game. I'm sure she will after that performance, and everybody will remember that Lynn Williams is a top player, and she always has been, always will be. And you got to look at what she brings to the team, and you know, not other players, and don't compare her to other players. She's different. She's a unique player. There's no question. And Sam Mewis is Sam Mewis. You need Sam Mewis on the field. I don't care who you are, what team in the world you are. Netherlands could have done with her today. You know what I'm saying? Sweden could do with her. Anyone in the world, it's Sam Mewis on the field. So I think the U.S. will win if Sam Mewis plays on the field. I think she just gives an extra drive out of that midfield. And I think that goal will lift her form up a little bit for the semi-final. I think she's a definite go-to to me now the rest of the way.
And that's what struck me. To me, I thought those subs were predetermined. Their idea was, it's a hot day. These games are rapid fire. We're going to sit, because they sat, I mean, some superstars until the second half. They didn't Rose Lavelle can play all game for me. So, and Lavelle didn't come into the second half. I think they were thinking,
let's get to the hour mark, 0-0, and then let's bring the weapons in, Alex, Press, Rose, and win the game. You know what I'm saying? I think that's what probably was the previous thought to it. And then the U.S. obviously got a couple of goals, and things may have been a little bit different, but I think that was definitely the thought process going into the game, no question.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to deviate from that when you're suddenly taking off arguably two of your best players in the game. So hopefully they will both continue to play. Paul Riley, what kind of a challenge, you alluded to it before, will Canada play for or pose for the United States?
I don't see much there, to be honest with you. I think they're a good side, solid side. But I think it's a great draw for the U.S. You know, they avoided Australia, and you know, three of the teams that were in the group of death got through to the semifinals, so it shows how strong the group was. So I think the other semifinals are a much better matchup, I think. I think this is a mismatch, to be honest. I think it'll be a 2-3-0 at least. And I think the U.S. will find their rhythm, and then they got to break the fast press, the strong press of both teams, Australia and Australia and Sweden. But I think Sweden right now, I mean, you got to fancy Sweden. But the U.S., they can just find some rhythm in that semifinal game, which I think they will. Canada's been playing the same players too. They have a deep roster. They've been playing the same players. They look very tired today when I watched them play against Brazil. So I think it'd be interesting to see what they've got left in the tank come this weekend, you know.
I texted Paul Riley about 7:30 in the morning. I know you're watching. All right, finally, you have no – I mean, so many of your players are playing in the Olympics. Good luck against the Orlando Pride. Coming up tomorrow. I mean, Abby's playing, Dabina's playing. They're everywhere. I appreciate your time, and we will talk very soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Have a good one. All the best.
You too, Paul Riley, head coach, North Carolina Courage. When we come back, did the Hornets kill the draft? Did Kanata Edwards, not a scribe, did he think that the Hornets would trade Balsa? But before we take a quick break, I want to let all our listeners know about a brand new podcast from WRAL Studios. It's called Follow the Truth. Starts off by telling the story of Michael Jordan's father, James, who was murdered in 1993. We all know the story. But there's more to it. As the show digs through all the evidence and the trial, it questions whether the wrong person was convicted. It's hosted by WRAL-TV's Amanda Lamb. Fascinating listen. Find Follow the Truth now wherever you get your podcast. Most people, and I mean this, have never seen the first three players taken play for various reasons. Not that they're not great players, but most people have never seen Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, or Evan Mobley play because two of them played in witness protection and the other played while we were all asleep. Kanata Edwards, not of the Scribe Locked On Hornets podcast, he's seen them play because he is that way. And he joins us to talk about the draft. Am I wrong, do you think, in thinking this was a less anticipated draft than we have seen in a long time?
I don't think it was less anticipated as you think, Adam.
Okay.
As much as it is, like, you got to think about it like this. When we're talking about a draft where we kind of knew what was going to happen, quite honestly, Houston made no secret that they love Jalen Green for at least a couple of months. Cade Cunningham was the most obvious number one pick, and the only thing that we didn't know was Mobley, because most folks are not sick enough to watch Pac-12 basketball in 2021.
Right.
Most of us don't have that. Like, again, no one's that likes to torture themselves that much, except for maybe me and Brian Geisinger. That might be it. No one likes to torture themselves that much. So I get why no one, like between that and then the pandemic and everything else like that, this draft didn't have the draft that it probably should have, because those three guys are franchise guys pretty much.
I'm not even arguing that they're not great players, but when Cunningham plays at Oklahoma State, I mean, very few people are watching Oklahoma State basketball. Jalen Green, nobody's watching the G League Ignite team. We know he's a great prospect. And I saw the first time I saw Evan Mobley play, it was in the NCAA tournament, and I kind of felt cheated because, holy crap, I'd like to watch this guy play a lot more. But, you know, they play at 3 in the morning at Southern Cal. Yeah. So let's skip over all of that, because they are wonderful players. And talk to me about what the Charlotte Hornets did.
For once, maybe not for once, but under the Mitch Kupchak regime, they made a bunch of smart moves. I mean, starting before the draft, trading for Miles Plumlee, getting a backup center, which was going to be an issue. There were rumors that it was going to be Daniel Tice. And instead, they decided we're going to use the trade market, bring in a backup center, and then that way you don't have to shop hungry. And then they let the board come to them. They got James Bouknight at 11, which is a guy that was rumored to go as high as 6. And I love Booker. I love what he did. The only question that you have for a guy like that is, can he play defense?
Right.
Between that and then trading up for Ty Jones, which, mind you, Mitch Kupchak should be arrested for grand theft draft pick, because the Knicks will never see that first-round pick. It'll be 2 seconds, because it's top 18 protected for 2 years and then top 14 protected for the next couple of years. So maybe it transfers in like 3 or 4 years, and if not, it turns into 2 second-round picks, 2 future seconds. So between that, like, the way Mitch Kupchak operated this draft is a way that we've never seen the Charlotte Hornets operate, especially under Michael Jordan. And it just shows you that Michael Jordan does trust Mitch Kupchak, and that matters a lot when it comes to letting someone run your organization. You can tell the trust is there, because, quite honestly, I was expecting to sell the 56th pick for almost $2 million, and instead they draft Scotty Lewis. A lot of this makes sense. A lot of this, in terms of what they're going to do going forward, makes this team very, very exciting, and is going to create an interesting roster battle when you consider that there's only 15 guys that are allowed on a NBA roster, and most importantly, you're only allowed to have 2 two-way guys. And Scotty Lewis can fill one of those. Maybe J.T. Thor fills the other. But after that, it becomes old friend Vernon Carey may have to fight for a roster spot. Dick Richards may have to fight for a roster spot. You're talking about a guy like again, their center, like the Martin twins, may be fighting for a roster spot on the team come September. And it makes one great summer league team that's going to be really, really awesome to watch in like a couple of weeks, if I'm not going to be honest. And yes, watching summer league is another one of those things only I like to do when I
enjoy. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Probably won't be watching a ton, although you never know what's going to happen. I might be watching a lot of summer league ball. But look, one of the drawbacks, and Nada the Scribe is joining us, I believe from New York City. One of the things that was obvious last year about the Hornets is that they lacked size. They needed help up front. At the very least, Mason Plumlee provides them with an adult, not a project, but an adult who could at least eat up, let's just say, 15 minutes a night if all things work out. Was there anything else you wanted them to do?
Honestly, no. Like, the way they handled that was perfect. The way they did this was, okay, we're going to get the two guard. We're going to let our board fall to us. Get a guy that we had rated much higher. And then after that, they went and got Kai Jones, who's going to be the project, who I need to preface this with anything. Do not expect anything out of him this year.
Sure.
He's going to be a guy that's going to be in Greensboro for at least, I want to say, three quarters of next season, and that's going to be okay. And then you have JT Thor, who is another one of those hybrid forwards. And what and I like to put it this way with what the Charlotte Hornets did. They decided, can our unicorn slay your dragon? Can we get as many unique guys as we can that can create, again, matchup problems? And at some point, you're going to have to – now it becomes easier for LaMelo to operate. You have bigs that can hedge on the pick and pop. You have bigs that can defend and move their feet on the pick and roll, which is something the Charlotte Hornets haven't had in quite a while. So this is a team that is very, very versatile on defense, and now – It's fair to put playoff aspects. They don't have the full max slot that they used to in terms of free agency, but at the same time, this team is going to be very, very interesting going into next year because there are going to be playoff expectations.
Yeah, there should be. All right, before we let Nada the Scribe go, Unicorns versus Dragons, I believe, are two pro Quidditch franchise nicknames.
That they are.
Let me ask you this, and I'm probably biased because I have never been a huge fan, but did the Lakers make a good trade in getting Russell Westbrook?
Yes, for the first 82 games. Because Russell's going to give you enough hustle and everything else to get you through the first 82. The last 16, where you're going to need the shooting, the spacing, and everything else, I don't see how he helps you.
Right.
Because at this point, and I think it was Chris Herring of Sports Illustrated that put it the best way, Lakers have the spacing of a shoebox, right? And we're talking about one of those mini, like the sandals, the fly shoeboxes. There's no spacing on that floor. You can guard them within the three-point line. That's going to be a problem unless they get Buddy Hield. If they get Buddy Hield, okay, I get it. They don't have any shooting. And until then, I'm not sure I fully believe them.
Yep.
LeBron's a little bit older. AD's injury prone. And Russ can't shoot. At some point, you're literally going to have to get some more shooters in there. And I just don't see where.
To me, the guy that they would that I think that they needed was Kyle Lowry. Because I think Lowry is the playoff. He's the complete opposite of Russell Westbrook. He's the guy you want in the playoffs as opposed to the guy you want during the regular season. Nada the Scribe, Kanata Edwards, Locked On Hornets podcast. I appreciate your time, my friend. Enjoy. We'll talk very soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know I had to get a bagel. I was like, first thing I did was I got a bagel when I was up here.
Where'd you go?
You know that.
Where'd you go?
I went to Absolute Bagels up in off of Park. It was really good. Line was real long, but I got myself a good bagel and lox. Now I'm good to go.
We could have a long discussion about the proper way to not make a bagel. I can't make it, but I can dress a bagel. I am the master of that. We'll have that conversation another time. Nod, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Talk to y'all soon.
You got it. This is the Adam Gold Show. It's a Friday. We're having fun. You know how we have fun on a Friday? We bring in friends that we could just goof around with, talk about important things or not, and we call it the roundtable. We have we don't have music. Usually we play the clip from Monty Python, but don't worry about it. We don't need it. Most of the kids out there don't even know who Monty Python is. Joe Giglio from 99.9 The Fan of WRELSportsFan.com joins us in studio. Luke DeCock from the News and Observer is on assignment out and about somewhere, and I appreciate both of your times. Luke, we're going to talk a little Canes here in a minute, but we're going to start with college football, so let me throw it to you first. Texas A&M and Missouri both decided, you know what? We want Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC, even though they were ticked off about it a week ago. What happened?
It was a fait accompli. There was no way they were going to stop it. You're going to be part of this conference with these people. You've got Greg Sankey twisting your arm like he's twisted a lot of arms over the last year. You bite the bullet and you smile and you play nice and you move on and start figuring out how you're going to spend all that extra money. To me, that's the least surprising part of this process. there's a million things that have happened with this. There's Sankey pulling his Hyman Roth. There's ESPN, did they or did they not work the gears and levers behind the Wild and Wonderful Oz? And then there's Jack Swarbrick looking out for number one like nobody else does. I mean, I think, what we've learned about the way this stuff works through this process has perhaps been more enlightening than the changes themselves.
We're going to talk about Notre Dame. I'm not sure that these developments ultimately are good for Notre Dame, but Joe Giglio, is there a competitive element here that makes any sense if you are Arkansas, Mississippi, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, heck, Texas? Is there a competitive element here that makes any sense why you would want to approve something like this?
No. Other than Greg Sankey knew the playoff was going to expand and more SEC teams were going to be included in the field.
Right.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
But that was the case before last week.
Sure. Sure. But it's more money too. Right?
No. So what I'm trying to get at is if you're Arkansas.
Yeah, but if you're Arkansas, you have no say in the SEC.
No, I understand. But haven't you just done a Maryland where you have, in exchange for the paycheck, you have given up all hope of being competitive? Maryland's going to max out, and I bet they rarely get to it, at 4 Big Ten wins a year in football. That's a wow. Contract extensions for everybody. What's Arkansas going to do? Texas and Oklahoma, I mean, I assume if they keep divisions, Texas and Oklahoma is going to be right there.
You'd be surprised to learn, Adam, I don't spend any of my free time thinking about Arkansas football.
No, I understand that. But from their perspective, you think about everything like that. From their perspective, I don't get the competitive.
Isn't Texas just another win for Arkansas at this point?
It may be.
Like, Texas football seriously?
I've joked about it. I'm not sure why Texas wants it.
I'm not sure either. It's stability. It's more money. I mean,
it is more.
Texas
money.
Has more money than everybody now. I mean, that's the crazy part.
I don't understand.
I know Texas's motivation. This is purely Texas A&M has something nice.
Right.
They made a good move. They made a smart move. And now Texas is going, wait a second. Texas A&M isn't supposed to have good things. We can't allow this. We can't allow little brother to do this to us. We can't be shown up by them.
I mean, look. Can the SEC get that much better, Luke?
I don't think so. But I think if you get to a point where every at-large spot in the playoff is occupied by an SEC team, you're eventually going to get to a point where, the SEC, I think the theory that the SEC is preparing for a post-NCAA era is probably what the end game is here. Build a conference that can stand on its own. You know, if Ohio State wants to try to build a super conference, if anyone else wants to try, Clemson wants to try, go ahead. But we're going to have these teams. We're going to play our by the end of this, our champion may be the de facto national champion, whether there's a CFP or not. I mean, I feel like there's a bit of sort of end of the world disaster prepping going on with the SEC here. And they're trying to corner the market on football. They're trying to collect all the resources and supplies and get them stockpiled before anyone else can. So there's nothing left for anyone else. I mean, that's when you get to the heart of this. College athletics has become a zero-sum game. It didn't used to be. It used to be that a rising tide lifts all boats, which is why the ACC distributes all of its bowl and NCAA tournament mm-hmm. money equally. But now it's not. It's atavistic. It's you know, the last man standing. And the SEC basically said, you know, we're going to look out for the SEC. Notre Dame's going to look out for Notre Dame. Those two guys pushed a college football playoff plan that worked for them with all their inside knowledge about the shady stuff they're going to try to do. And that's it. There's no global perspective. There's no pulling on the same rope. There used to be. There isn't anymore. And I think that's just what happens when there's this much money in the system. If you don't get it, someone else will.
Luke DeCock and Joe Giglio here on the roundtable on the Adam Gold Show. All right, so Notre Dame has come up a couple of times. Does Jim Phillips have a choice but to figure out some way to make Notre Dame part of the ACC, or does he have to wait for the next cataclysmic event, which Andy Staples pointed out was a 40-team Super League, which obviously Notre Dame would have to be a part of. But, I mean, Joe, what do you think?
Well, Notre Dame already is a part of the ACC, and they do get money, more money from television revenue because of those five games each year from mm-hmm. Notre Dame. They're not going to get a commitment beyond that. That's clear at this point. And their one leverage point was last year when Notre Dame was legitimately facing mm-hmm. not playing football last year.
Right.
And the ACC saved them.
Yeah.
And now Notre Dame has basically turned their middle finger up at the ACC by saying, oh, you're good. Keep hiring our former athletic directors. Keep hiring everyone who's worked for us. Keep going.
Right.
See if that gets you anywhere. All that does is get you people who are sympathetic to Notre Dame and their need, Luke, for independence, because they have to play Stanford every year, Luke.
Yeah, you know, the ACC's best way around that is just to add Navy, and then Notre Dame yeah. can't complain about not being able to play Navy. I think the thing about Notre Dame is, the independence thing is fine, whatever. There's only two pressure points. It's scheduling and championship access. So the ACC's move here, if Jim Phillips has the sand to do it, is to insist on a 4 or 16 playoff or an 18 playoff that requires you to be a conference champion. That's the only pressure point they have left, right? Last year, the president did a big favor for Notre Dame. We're going to bail you out because you're at all of our meetings and you come to all of our events and you come to Amelia Island because there's 15 ACC schools. And Notre Dame said, yeah, sure, thanks, and then stabbed the ACC right in the back and said, no, we're good. Because Notre Dame still – the ACC thinks of Notre Dame as one of them. Notre Dame does not think of itself as the ACC, with the exception of Mike Bray. So the only pressure point left, now that you've let that slip, is to get to a playoff that requires Notre Dame to win a conference championship game. Does Jim Phillips have the support of the president? Does he have the courage to go against Notre Dame in a way that helps the ACC and hurts Notre Dame? Because Notre Dame is part of the conference. I don't know the answer to that. I think that's the ACC's play. The ACC's play is to fight back on 12 teams. It's to push for 4, 6, or 8. It's to push for opening it up to someone other than ESPN, because that's going to have to go against, you know, bite the hand that feeds them.
Wow.
But have an open bidding war. But I think that's the play. I don't know what else the ACC can do other than be left behind and wait 9 years for Clemson to get to a point where the buyout's small enough to jump to the SEC.
Yeah, the grant of rights is through, what, 36?
36.
And if the grant of rights is strong, and I do believe Texas and Oklahoma will probably challenge the Big 12's grant of rights in the next couple of years, if the grant of rights is strong, then that buys Jim Phillips, I can't do the math, 15 years. All right, let me move on to a couple of other things real quick. And, Giglio, if you want to jump in here on Tony D'Angelo to the Carolina Hurricanes. That's fair. But let me get Luke DeKalb. You and I have not talked about this in any grand scale. Thoughts on Tony DeAngelo to the Hurricanes?
You know, I think there's a couple things. Obviously, what I wrote, I think, made my feelings pretty clear. If you're the kind of franchise that wants to position itself as welcoming and a belief that hockey is for everyone and you're part of a larger community and that all of that, which the Hurricanes have, and it's fine. It's nominal. It's good. It's great. You can't turn around and sign a guy that your fans don't want, and they don't want him not because he's a bad player, but they don't want him because they don't like him as a person.
Right.
You're basically telling your fans that they don't matter to you. But this is a franchise that has, through a 10-year playoff drought and now through some success, positioned itself as a franchise where the fans matter. And I draw a line here, as you and I talked about at ACC Kickoff in Charlotte, between the Nedeljkovic trade, which fans didn't like, and the DeAngelo signing, which fans don't like, because the Nedeljkovic trade is a hockey move. People don't like it because they liked him as a player and a person, all that. But you're betting that the front office is going to go get two better goalies mm-hmm. and that their assessment of Ned was that he wasn't good enough. And then, to be honest, I like the guys they brought in. I mean, I think those are good moves. If Antti Raanta can stay healthy, he's a great goalie. And if not, Frederik Andersen's got a pretty long track record. But DeAngelo was a player that they didn't want for reasons that had nothing to do with hockey. And you can say that you're smarter than people on hockey, and you should. You shouldn't make hockey moves based on what the fans want. That's a dumb way to run a franchise. But you should make moves based on players that the fans think are toxic. You're telling people that, on one hand, you're smarter than them with Nedeljkovic, and on the other hand, that they don't matter to you. And I think that's really what stuck in a lot of people's sort of craw on this one. That just the sort of refutation of what they'd been sold that the Hurricanes were.
I'm going to flip this over to Giglio here by using a college, a local college. But I will just say this in transition. You don't have to be a great person. You simply have to be a great teammate, because there are a lot of bad people who are also great teammates, or at least good teammates, that help you win, because there are a lot of different people in locker rooms that coexist within team confines, because they help you win and do what it takes on the ice or on the court or on the field. But here's my issue, and I'm going to use the example of the University of North Carolina. It wasn't so much that they had the academic issues or all of the other violations. It was that Carolina presented themselves as different, the Carolina way. And I keep referring to this. Rod Brind'Amour has said the number one concern of ours and any player we bring in is the person. That, to me, means that you're holding yourself to a different standard. Is it fair to say that clearly Carolina has lowered their standards?
Yeah, it's kind of like for what, too, right? Like Tony DeAngelo, he's been given up on by the Lightning, who took him in the first round. Phoenix or Arizona is not mm-hmm. a good NHL franchise.
Right.
Even they were like, yeah, we don't want this guy. And he played six games for the Rangers last year.
Right.
So it's like...
And then they bought him out after signing him to a contract that was almost... $10 million over 2 years.
I have more of a problem with the Hurricanes' messaging than their actual actions. Like, if they simply had said, and they kind of hinted at it, Donwell kind of hinted at it, you know, hey, we watched the playoffs. We didn't think Alex Nedeljkovic was good enough for us to win the Stanley Cup with mm-hmm. him. Our only goal is to win the Stanley Cup. If they had signed Tony DeAngelo and said, hey, we just lost Dougie Hamilton in all of this power play production. We get it. There are some concerns with his behavior. We have talked to him about that. We're going to set up whatever program, like Montreal just came out with their draft pick, right? I mean, but
right, yeah,
you're at least trying to control some of the message. For Don Waddell, who's a really smart guy, to come out and say there were no red flags, Don, there were three NHL teams who gave up on him before he turned 26 years old. That's like standing on top of the lighthouse with the hurricane flags, just waving them in your face. Are you kidding? That's my only problem.
That's a good problem. Teams don't give up on right shot defensemen who are very good offensively.
He's a talented player.
Who are 25.
And I get that
right.
part.
They don't, unless there are reasons. All right, Luke, last word on this, and then we're going to move on to something from the Olympics.
Here's all you need to know. What Don Waddell said, and these are clearly not Don Waddell's words, this is not a $1 million player. This is like the AAF,
right.
This is a distressed asset purchased cheap, hoping to sell high. That's all that matters. That's all they care about. That's all you need to know. If you don't like that, if you don't think that's the way the franchise should be run, if you think they should stand for something bigger, as you were talking about, too bad. This is the same deal as Nedeljkovic. We looked at what he was worth. We didn't think it was that. We got rid of him. We dumped it. We sold high. That's all you need to know. These are your Carolina Hurricanes. Deal with it.
All right. Final topic for Luke Dukak of the News and Observer and Joe Giglio of 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. The Olympics are ongoing. I am captivated by all of it. So moving away from the Simone Biles or anything we've seen in the pool or anything like that, Luke, what is your favorite, I'm just going to say, off-brand Olympic sport to watch?
I did not prep you for this and tell you to ask me this. I just want to say that for the record. I went out a couple weeks ago and hung out in Holly Springs with three Olympic freestyle BMXers. It is going to be mind-blowing. Like, I had a blast. The TV doesn't do justice how high in the air these guys and girls are, how dangerous it is.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what freestyle BMX looks like in the Olympics. And I have to admit, I haven't paid a lot of attention to it over the years, but having seen it in person and seen some of the stuff that these riders can do, it's amazing. Also, looking forward, not necessarily offbeat, I'm looking forward to seeing Randolph Ross from Garner run in the 400. He starts tomorrow night in the prelims. He's got a real chance to medal, and I think that would be really cool.
Look at Luke repping the G.
I stole it.
Really quick, Connor Fields from Team USA BMX racer crashed, and he was stretchered off. I don't know the extent of the injury. It is incredibly dangerous. We were driving.
That's the racing. This is the freestyler that jumps.
Okay. So X
this
Games.
Is insane.
The X Games.
Like it is the X Games. It's going to be a little different at the Olympics, but it's amazing. It's very cool.
We were driving in today watching the women's game. My son was watching the game on my phone, and they showed a promo for things that are coming up. And he went, oh, BMX? Oh, that's going to be cool. So, of course, he's 12. All right, Joe, what's your favorite off-brand Olympic event?
I feel like if my last name was Giglio Isovich and grew up in Yugoslavia, I would have been a world-class handball player. Oh. I definitely would have been into handball if I had grew up in a different country.
What? That's a hybrid of...
It's like football, rugby, basketball.
It's a little basket. You have to dribble the ball. It's water polo without the pool.
Yeah.
I love water polo.
Water polo is like... Water polo talk
is
about
great.
Dangerous. I don't
water
know how
polo
they do it.
Is great. What do those helmets do?
I just had the same question.
What are the helmets?
It's only if you get elbowed in the head. That's the only thing that they can possibly help with.
I just don't
keep you from bleeding in the pool.
Fair.
Maybe there's gauze inside of the ears. And I like equestrian.
Here, spend 2 hours in a pool without standing. You know, you have to swim the entire time. Like, I don't think most people understand the rules of water polo.
Treading water.
I know.
Could you imagine being a goalkeeper?
No.
You're treading.
How about a referee? You're standing on the edge like, hey, get above the water so I can yell at you.
It's not to mention the humidity for the referees. But equestrian, by the way, we're going to watch Springsteen's daughter, Jessica, in the show jumping this upcoming week, I believe.
Yeah.
Springsteen's daughter.
Duke alum.
We're the two Jersey people. Like, you know, he's not going to be able to follow that.
He's the one who said Duke alum. I didn't know Jessica Springsteen went to Duke.
She was on Duke's World Championship Equestrian team. Oh, I'm sorry, that's World Championship Social Media team.
Wait.
I got those two confused.
Duke had an equestrian team?
No, I'm making a joke.
He was making a social media joke.
Okay, I get it. Luke Dukak, I appreciate your time on Twitter, at Luke Dukak. Thanks, man.
All right, man.
Joe Giglio, you're going to talk on the radio here in Raleigh starting at 3 o'clock.
I am. It's a beautiful day.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting ADAM to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.